This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Oregon History Comics series.
Yeah, a lot of people are familiar with the Oregon History Comics series that came out not this past March, but the year before. And that was a series of 10 comics about Oregon history with 10 different artists. But I wrote them all. And we're thinking, okay, those were really successful. They sold out of 2 print runs. So what's next? What should we do next? And I thought instead of having me write a 10 series of comics next, we should get more people to write comics and more people to draw comics. So this is branching out to get sort of broader perspectives in the series.
So yeah, this is going to be, it says it's more like history in the making than the last comics. This is going to be honoring the lives of social activists who are alive now, fighting for the rights we enjoy in Oregon. And a series of 10 comics, each of the 10 contributing artists will be awarded $500. Each of the 5 contributing writers will be awarded $500. And there's also a nomination form for an outstanding activist. So send your story tips on someone who you think has made a significant difference in the state. Applications are due May 24th. Go to knowyourcity.org and search for comics.
Yeah, it seems like exactly the kind of project that a lot of KBOO listeners would be interested in, because it's honoring and informing people about the lives of people who've really made a lot of change in Oregon and maybe who don't get written about that often. And it's funding the work of local artists and writers. So it's a really great project. Knowyourcity.org is the place to go. Check it out and apply.
Yes, very community news there. All right. Now I want to get down to the graphic novella here, Tom McCall and the Vortex. I do want to mention that Daniel DeFord was not available to join us this morning for a very happy reason. He's currently in Ashland on an artist's fellowship. And when he comes back to Portland, he'll be bringing along a new woodcut comic. And with any luck, there'll be a gallery show that we can announce. Daniel has been on the show, of course, but listeners may be more familiar with his work just from strolling along the Transit Mall on Northwest 5th and 6th Avenues downtown. There you'll see the Daniel DeFord art installation, The Legend of the Green Man of Portland. And, tell us about the, okay, here's the comic here, so, Tom McCall and the Vortex.
Yeah, so this is a comic that just came out in March, and it's a really beautiful comic illustrated by Daniel DeFord, who you just said is a local artist. He teaches at PNCA, and he has this kind of dark, old, I think of it as kind of a sketchy, swampy, dark style of art. And
a lot
I wrote
of heavy brushwork.
Yeah, a lot of heavy brushwork. And a lot of people don't know the story about Tom McCall and the Vortex. Tom McCall, of course, was Oregon's governor in the late 60s and early 70s, and he was up against a lot of sort of intense political and social change in the country at the time. And he organized or funded this rock festival as a way to keep people from protesting against Richard Nixon's visit here. And this, it's a really strange but true piece of our history, and that's what this comic collects. And it's a really large, beautiful comic. You can find it also at knowyourcity.org if people are interested in buying it. And it's in local comic shops, too. So Floating World Comics, all over town, you can go find a copy of this.
Now, I'm going to set this story up, the story behind the comic, by playing a little clip of Tom McCall himself. And people who aren't familiar, this is quite a while ago. This happened, 1970. These Brahmin tones that you just don't hear from political figures anymore. Here he is talking about the... And for people who think of Tom McCall merely as a progressive governor, here he is talking in glowing terms about the American Legion who are coming to visit, and Richard Nixon was supposed to be part of that convention in 1970. And he's also talking about the People's Army Jamboree, which was supposedly an outgrowth of Students for Democratic Society. So here's Tom McCall talking about the People's Army Jamboree threat to bring 50,000 youth to Portland in August of 1970.
That the American Legion Convention and the Jamboree are occurring at the same time is no coincidence. The Legion members are here as invited guests of the city of Portland to conduct
their annual convention. Okay, we got about a minute.
The Jamboree is here to confront the Legion and for no other purpose. Planning by this group for a massive confrontation with the Legion in Portland continued through the spring and early summer. Concerted recruitment of persons to join the Jamboree, primarily through the underground press, began nationwide in May, and it still continues. On July 6th, I asked the Jamboree not to hold their gathering simultaneously with that of the American Legion, I warned of possible violence, saying in part, I urge you to reschedule the People's Army Jamboree. My request was summarily rejected. I've kept the Jamboree under close surveillance since its inception. Periodic intelligence reports, evaluations, and briefings have involved the Portland Police, sheriff's units of Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties, the Oregon State Police, the FBI, the U.S. Secret Service, the Postal Inspection Service, the National Guard, and the Department of the Army. Their conclusions were clear. Large numbers of young people were coming to Portland to confront the American Legion. The question was, how should we deal with the situation?
And how did he deal with the situation? Because this is August of 1970. Tom McCall is up for election, re-election in November of 1970. People had called him indecisive, but he seemed to be in a no-win situation. What happened at this point, Sarah Merck?
Well, this is exactly the story that the comic tells, which is, I think, a really interesting point of tension in our history, because here's Tom McCall. He's a progressive guy. He's a progressive governor. And he really kind of sympathizes, I think, with the protesters. He after this point, he comes out against Richard Nixon. He's kind of a war hawk, but he feels like what they're doing is right. On the other hand, you have to think about what's going on in the country at the time. There's major student protests at universities across the country. Portland State has just had a big protest and this makes people nervous. Property is being destroyed. People are marching in the streets. He's worried, and the mayor of Portland is worried, and a lot of people in the state are worried that if they're allowed to protest against Nixon and the American Legion, there's going to be like widespread property destruction. It's basically going to be a free-for-all riot from the hippie youth. So a group of people come to him and say that they want to organize sort of an alternative peaceful protest, which is this rock festival, and they need a state park to do it in. And he says, that's actually just crazy enough to work. And he gets major businesses, like basically the state's biggest business is timber companies, large businesses in Portland, to fund, and also with state dollars, this rock festival called Oregon Vortex One, the Biodegradable Festival of Life.
The timber built a huge stage out in the field.
Yeah, out in Estacada. And a lot of people went to that festival instead of going to the protest. There were still some protests in Portland, but they didn't wind up being violent at all or really stopping the American Legion at all. And instead, a lot of people had a great time at this rock festival. And at the end of the summer, he was able to, you know, go on TV and give a big stump speech about how, while that summer in 1970, across the country, there'd been riots in pretty much every major American city. In Portland, there'd only been one window broken.
Yeah, this, by the way, the story of Vortex One, it was forgotten for a lot of years until Matt Love, who is another Oregon historian, he works out at the coast as a high school teacher, he brought some footage back together, did a documentary, did a book about Vortex One, and you all were part of a centennial celebration at the Jack London Bar for Tom McCall, where Matt Love was one of the people showing photographs, telling stories.
Yeah, it really resonates today because we're still talking a lot about how do people protest in the city, how do people protest in Oregon, and what do governments do to try to defuse that, to shut it down, or to foster it? So you can see the way that I think a lot of people have connected with this story, thinking about the Occupy protests last year and what the city's approach was to that versus what Tom McCall's approach was to this protest back in 1970 that was dealing with a lot of the same issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was just a fascinating time in America's history, in Oregon's history, and we just had an opportunity to really examine creative ways that government, business, and protesters could come together and absolutely come up with a constructive, positive solution to potential violence. And, you know, at the time, the FBI was saying 50,000 protesters were going to come to Portland and there was going to be bloodshed and mayhem in the streets. And while those numbers were greatly exaggerated by the FBI, nonetheless, as Sarah said, there was a bunch of hippies that were not protesting in the streets of Portland. They were out in Estacada, listening to decidedly very bad music from all the accounts I've read. And, you know, smoking dope and having a good time.
You're listening to Words and Pictures on KABU. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And my guests this morning, live in the studio, are comics writer Sarah Merck and Kick-Ass History founder Doug Kenk Crispin. We're talking about the legendary Oregon Governor Tom McCall, who would have turned 100 this year. You know, Doug, I don't know if we'll ever see the likes of Tom McCall again, at least not in our modern-day political landscape. McCall was, he was a gambler, a drinker, a media gadfly, and most of all, a progressive Republican. Some might say he was too radical to even fit into the Democratic or independent camps here in 21st century Oregon.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty solid assessment. In fact, he considered running for president during his second term and really kind of going on an independent kind of, you know, wanted to broadcast the Oregon story and what he had done in Oregon to bring forward to the national folks. So I think that's absolutely a fair assessment. He's, you know, I agree with Sarah that he was a very progressive governor, but, you know, some of the things that she said, you know, absolutely resonate or absolutely true. He was a war hawk. He was the environmental governor is how he's triumphed, but had just a horrific record on clear cutting in a heavily invested in timber economy state. And, you know, some of these things, I think, unfortunately, other organizations kind of passed over a bit during the centennial celebration. You know, it was what we at Kick-Ass Oregon History called the Big Three, the Bottle Bill, the Beach Bill, and land reform, which are absolutely enduring legacies that Tom McCall gave to the state of Oregon. And they're fantastic legacies. But I think when we just focus on the Big Three, we kind of miss some of the shortcomings, some of the hurdles that this man had to confront. And if we leave that out of his legacy, I think we kind of make it too simple and we kind of cheapen what was given to Oregon. So at Kick-Ass Oregon History, we did three podcasts that we called The Other Tom McCall. And we tried to examine some of these other topics a bit more in detail, prison reform, his hawkish stance on the Vietnam War, and of course, the environmental, in quotes, governor that we've been bestowed with. So we just tried to dig into that a little bit more. And, you know, if folks want to hear some more about the other Tom McCall, I say they go to orhistory.com and check it out.
Orhistory.com is where you can find Kick-Ass Oregon History. And you're making a really interesting point because, Sarah Merck, the comic book, Tom McCall and the Vortex, makes the point that the big three legislative accomplishments that we still think of today, the beach bill, the beach access bill, the bottle return bill, and the land use planning, the urban growth boundary regulations, these all came in the second term of McCall's governorship. And you make the point in the book here that this big governor, this big sort of Hail Mary play that he did with the Vortex in 1970, this kind of gave him the steel to do these really great gambles with legislative accomplishments that came in his second term.
Yeah, I think Doug's really right to point out that we just don't see politicians like this today who don't follow a party line. You know, he was a Republican who called out the Republican president. You know, he was a Republican who sponsored good land use planning and also clear cutting. We just don't see those kind of allegiances today. And he really went with sort of how he felt, which and some of those calls today, I think I'm like, how could he have been so invested in Oregon's landscape and in preserving Oregon's land and also be so invested in clear cutting? That's just who he was. And he was really more of a person who led as a person. But yeah, he didn't do a lot of those progressive policies until his second term when he was safe. You know, he didn't feel safe. He was basically running for re-election the whole time. And with this, it gave the Vortex made people see him as somebody who could really make decisions and take a stand on things and as somebody that they trusted. So he was re-elected in the state and then went on to do all these sort of progressive politics.
You know, it's important to remember that the bottle bill came up as a legislative issue during McCall's first term, and he said, no, let's not push that through. You know, and so it was kind of squashed, but then it came again, and, you know, of course, we now are able to get nickels for all of those beer cans that we have in our backyard.
And at the beginning of the comic, by the way, the Tom McCall and the Vortex comic, Sarah Merck and Daniel DeFord, there's a sort of a rundown of McCall's broadcasting career starting in the Navy during World War II. Yeah, actually, you know, it's kind of, he has a a really interesting past. Was born in New England to a privileged household, but grew up in Eastern Oregon, loved the landscape. And all of us here broadcasters at the table, I think we have a soft spot for a guy who went from being a reporter, from being a muckraker, to being in the governor's office. You know, you get in a position like that, and all of a sudden, you know, you find that change is not as easy as it looks from the seat of the person with the microphone.
I agree, you know, and we also have perhaps the most media savvy governor that we will ever have. I mean, unless Stephanie Strickland runs or something like that, I don't know. But just fantastic ability to present a good story to the media, to get those ideas out into the Oregon population's mind, to really kind of introduce some of these policy things that he wanted to do. I mean, the guy, if when we listened to his speech about the American Legion during the Vortex speech, he's just a masterful, masterful wordsmith.
And it helped that he had friends who were in TV and in radio. There's a really famous story about him running for election. And, well, although he really understood...
This was in 1966 against Bob Straub.
He understood how media works. He was not always the best presenter. And he has some debates during that election where he started out being super sweaty and sort of disoriented and just not very good. And his friends at the TV station... stopped the cameras and said, "Oh, we've had technical difficulties. We have to restart." And they restarted the debate, and then he did very well. So I think there's two things going on there. One, he really does understand how media works and how to sell his political ideas and how things are going to play. But he also has some friends who can help him out behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I just, you know, again, some of the anecdotal stories of how just incredibly stressed out McCall would be towards the end of the election. And he would essentially be locked in a hotel room with Ed Westerdahl, with his aide, because he couldn't be in public. He couldn't bear it. He could not witness those last few days when it was so down to the wire. Now, I just can't imagine a candidate today disappearing, essentially, from the public eye.
Well, Mark Sanford, and you see what happened to him.
Exactly.
Well, he was a deadline guy, too, because, you know, he would be down to the minute writing his columns, getting his work in. Northwest Film Center recently dug up a copy of Pollution in Paradise, the 1962 TV documentary that he did for, was it KGW?
KGW.
Yeah, and this was actually a really huge influence on the cleanup of the Willamette.
Absolutely. It was a huge influence on cleaning up the Willamette. There's I know the first half of Pollution in Paradise is on the KGW website. I don't know if they have the second half on it yet, but you can check it out there. Yeah, it was huge for that. It was also huge for McCall's political career, because KGW made copies of this film and they showed them around the state. So people in Redmond, people in Bend, you know, people out in Nissa were able to actually hear Tom McCall. Voice, we're able to actually associate his name with that film, and it's really been attributed with kind of helping him get much more out in the public limelight.
So let's talk more about the projects that you two are doing to bring history to life here in Oregon, in Portland in particular. You know, I think there's something in the air just the last few years. I can remember 10 or 12 years ago when the fellow from the Geological Survey was having a really tough time keeping his tours together of the Shanghai tunnels. And nowadays, that's just blown up. There's tours all over the place from Know Your City, formerly the Dill Pickle Club, and from Doug, your organization, Kick-Ass Oregon History. And this is the seamy side of things. You know, we're finding out more about the pre-war and post-World War II era, when there were gambling dens, there were houses of ill repute, there was Burnside Street was Skid Road for a century, or it's still Skid Road when you think about it.
Yeah,
where the logs were skidded down to the river.
In our website, orhistory.com, of course, Kick-Ass Oregon History, we operate some of our own tours. For example, on April 20th, we just did the history of marijuana in Oregon bus tours. We went around to different sites and talked about the criminalization of marijuana in our state. That was a good time. I think in August, we're going to have Portland's historic strip club tour, where we go around down to some of the more aged strip clubs in town, and we talk about freedom of expression and freedom of speech and how strippers in Roseburg and Nissa, Oregon, actually got those conversations brought forward to the Oregon Supreme Court and strengthened our ability to talk on KABU about whatever we want to talk about through their shows in the strip clubs. But in addition, we also work with Know Your City, and we do a CDC Me Sinful Stories of Portland, where we walk around largely Old Town, and again, we talk about some of those themes that you were just talking about.
I see that CD Portland with Doug Ken Crispin on the knowyourcity.org. Walk through Portland's underbelly history of saloons, bordellos, opium dens, card rooms, and strip clubs, some of which are still in operation.
That's right. There are these things. They're called lottery machines. They're actually sanctioned by the state of Oregon, and you can put money in them and gamble. So yeah, knowyourcity.org is where you can find some more information on those tours. And we're not the only tour. They do fantastic, fantastic programming all around the city, and you should absolutely check it out.
Yeah, Sarah, are you? I've got this little handout here, and are you? I know that you've been involved with the comics side of the Know Your City projects, and there's a huge publication side. It's not just comics. There have been great archival treasures that have been reprinted, for example, by the Dill Pickle Club, Know Your City, and a lot of receptions that have been held around those publications.
Yeah, it's really great. It's funny how you can have these really amazing books that people remember and then they go out of print. They're reprinting sort of old Portland classics, which is great. It's sad how books, if they don't sell extremely well, just sort of tend to disappear. So it's important to do those reprints. And with the tours, yeah, there's a lot of tours around town that do that focus on history, and it's something. It's both for tourists and for locals. I know a lot of people, I mean, Portland is majority people who didn't grow up here, who weren't born in the state of Oregon. And so it's a really awesome opportunity for those people, like myself, who've just moved here, to get to know their city and to understand why things are the way they are. And I think it's pretty important for anybody who lives in the city to understand the dynamics that are behind what exists today. And that's what these tours really dig into. And it's good also for people who did grow up here. You might not have learned all the different perspectives on history when you were in school. And it's great to take a different perspective than just reading a big, dense history book that has sort of the official version of history. It leaves out things like the prostitution industry. It leaves out things maybe like the history of immigrants in Portland. And so these tours are set up to bring those perspectives into a mainstream conversation.
And a lot of the artists here in town have been doing a great job. Rose Bond did an animated installation in Old Town a couple of years ago that showed a wordless history of the Asian immigrant communities on one of the buildings down there. I know we've got a great thing coming up on during the Northwest Animation Festival, the weekend of 17th to 19th. Harry Smith, there's going to be a tribute to Harry Smith, who was a great artist, one of the filmmakers who's less known nowadays, but is worth exploring again. So this is, you know, with all the folks moving here, you know, it's important not just to learn sort of the modern day culture. You know, you don't honk, you clean up after your dog, things like that. But also, you know, what makes all those funky buildings, you know, what made them happen? All those streets and neighborhoods, what made them happen? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for us to just kind of get folks out into the neighborhoods, walking around, taking a look at everything that's going on, and really just, you know, introduce them to you know, new ideas and to discover more about their location. You know, like Sarah said, so many people are not from this area. And I think that there's just kind of a sense of wonder a lot of times, you know, when you learn some of these things.
Yeah, and people think about Portland and they think of the culture of Portland as being defined by sort of this Portlandia yuppie ideal, like not honking and cleaning up after your dog. Like, there are much more important and large dynamics at work here than those sorts of issues. So what I'm interested in exploring in these tours and why I think people should go on them is to learn the history of race in Oregon, to learn the history of different of redlining and different racial interactions in the city, and what groups have been disenfranchised throughout Oregon's history.
What is now the Elliott neighborhood and used to be a very, very vibrant nightclub scene.
Yeah, it's sort of that history can be obscured because A, we've torn a lot of it down, and B, now people look at the city and they think of it as sort of this yuppie place. But there's a lot of really important, interesting histories behind all that from groups that are still living here but don't fit into the TV show Portlandia.
Right, right. Well, we've been listening to Sarah Merck here on Words and Pictures on KABU. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. Sarah Merck is the writer of the Tom McCall and the Vortex comic, along with artist Daniel DeFord. And Doug Kent Crispin is the founder of Kick-Ass Oregon History. It's at orhistory.org. I just want to make this announcement once again. If you go to knowyourcity.org and search for comics, there is a project in the making, a call for artists and writers. They're awarding $7,500 in small grants to work on the project Comics for Change, Illustrated Stories from Oregon's Front Lines. Sarah and Doug, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us down.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And thanks to all our listeners at 90.7 FM and on the web. The audio from the show will be available later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station. We're going out now with some more music from Jacob's Ladder at Vortex One, the only state-sponsored rock festival in U.S. history.
It's time for the KABU News at Noon. I'm Kristen Yount. Senate Republicans use a rarely used formality to hold off confirming Thomas Perez to the cabinet position of Labor Secretary. Even though the caucus was granted more time, the GOP used procedural roadblocks to delay the confirmation. The date of the confirmation is pushed back another week to May 18th. Perez is criticized for being too ideological and too political for a job in the federal government. Census data released yesterday shows a significant change in the demographics among American voters. The data confirms what recent exit polls suggest. African American voters turned out at polls more than any other racial group. 66.2% of African Americans turned out, while only 64.1% of Caucasians hit the polls. The proportion of Latino and Asian voters grows, but the number still lags at around 50%. The number of white voters plummeted by 2 million votes between 2008 and 2012. Housing lender Fannie Mae reported record profits this quarter, earning $5.87 billion. Fannie Mae used tax credits from the bad loans it absorbed to offset costs. The federal policy dictates that net worth over $3 billion will have to go back to the U.S. government to pay back the bailout that occurred in 2008. The net worth of $64 billion will mean a dividend of $59.4 billion to the U.S. Treasury. The lender says that higher credit ratings are required for homebuyers now, and the recovering housing market is also a factor in the new housing boom. Haitian cholera victims are to sue the United Nations. The Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti is leading the charge that over 8,000 individuals have died and 500,000 have fallen ill from cholera since the earthquake in 2010. The suit asks for monetary compensation, medical treatment, improvements to clean water infrastructure, and an apology from the UN. Haitians blame the United Nations for exposing them to cholera because the UN did not screen deployed troops, and reckless acts caused untreated sewage to leak into the island's main waterway, making hundreds of thousands of people ill. Weather in Portland today is sunny and warm. We're going to hit 80 degrees, and there's no chance in heck of rain. This has been KABU News at Noon. I'm Kristen Yount. Please tune in for the latest in local, national, and international news right here at KABU, Monday through Friday, written by volunteers and produced right here in Southeast Portland.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at our carbon-neutral eco brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver, available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Shocks of Sheba has also been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Welcome to Shocks of Sheba.
Now I'ma sing my songs of culture. Yes, I'ma sing my songs of love. Like Jacob Miller, Peter Tosh, and Bob Marley did when they were singing to us long ago. Jacob said, forward. So clever, can't sever. Child children from righteous endeavor. 24/7 culture we deliver. Not gonna switch even a little bit. No star, we got to go through with it. No war too big, we can conquer it. Our love can conquer it. Just follow it. Tradition, tradition. Stand for truth and right and hold the wrong under derision. Cause division. Clouds forever floating, many hungry minds are open, and the food that they open for is word, song, and spoken. True wisdom awoken, it's glue for the broken. Not gonna stray, not for a second, no. When temptation beckons, tell them no. Music's a weapon, we lock and load. Never ending arsenal. Bring you so sweet. Feel your spirit and so complete. Dancing here within your life.